Welcome to the Social Linus podcast. This is Shenandoah Gallagher. I am sitting down today with Brandy C. Niffin. Of BrandyC.com. Brandy is a graphic designer and independent creative director. And, you know, we both actually graduated from the same school, Art Center of Design College, now Southwest University of Visual Arts. And Brandy has really taken life by the horns and started her own website. You can see her at BrandyC.com. So welcome, Brandy. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you started taking this whole life thing on.
Oh, man. Okay. So, yeah. So just so you know where to find me, Brandy C is spelled B-R-A-N-D-I-S. EA, so it's not like ABC, it's like the ocean, body of water, sea. Other than that, I decided to leave the formal world of art directing and kind of do my own thing due to some life circumstances. But as I was staying home, I realized I was getting kind of like bitter at designers around me because they were all doing such terrible work, and I was just getting really like complaining about it. And then one day I decided, like, what if I stop complaining and instead of just hoarding all this knowledge I have, why don't I share it and actually try to maybe make these designers that I'm cranky about a little bit better? So I decided to start writing a blog. This was like 3 years ago, and that was like really long form. And then I'm kind of ambitious, and it wasn't enough to write a blog. So the next year, I decided to start doing short design tips on YouTube. So you can still find those. They're just Brandy C design tips. They're like 2 to 4, maybe 5 minute tips on design, on creative thinking, on lots of different things every Tuesday. So that's what I did the next year. And after that, it was kind of like, all right, well, this is just me like talking at people. I feel like there's probably questions that people have, and I would like to have something that's more conversational. What if I did a podcast? So I talked with, my sister, quasi sister, I call her my sister, who is now my co-host, Michelle, who is a creative, but she's not a designer by any sense. And I thought, what a cool format would it be to have questions from a non-design standpoint on design, on creativity, on things like that, that maybe, you know, quote, normal people might have. And so we started that this past February. So we're going to be recording episode 33, I believe, this week. And it's been a fun journey. I also do freelance clients still. I really love focusing on like editorial book design type stuff, posters and music related design. I also teach design concepts to senior level, junior and senior level students at the school where we graduated, our alma mater. And I part-time homeschool my children. So I have a lot going on, but I think if I didn't, I'd be bored. I just need to have a lot on my plate, or I'll just like binge Netflix all day.
It's a struggle for all of us.
Yeah.
So as a mom, as a working mom, how do you balance all of this? Like, how do you manage your time effectively?
My husband says I'm motivated and self-motivated enough for both of us. So he has to procrastinate for the both of us. But, I think I hate to say this cause it just sounds like super cliche, but like one thing is like every morning, I guess it starts before the morning, every night before I go to bed, like I have to decide whether I will or will not wake up early in the morning. Like that's step one. If I manage to wake up early in the morning, which for me is about 5:15, so I can write around 5:30 to 6, that is like having the mindset of being ready to be motivated is like the biggest thing. The other thing as far as like my time management, is like, I just use all of my spare minutes. Like when the kids' breakfast is on the stove, you know, making eggs or something, and it happens to be a Thursday morning, which is when I upload the podcast. I'm listening to the podcast on my laptop for quality control while I'm making eggs, you know, and then drop off the kids at school, come home. First thing, I get on the computer, make my graphic, upload the show notes. Like, it's just a matter of figuring out, like, okay, I have a few minutes right now. Can I post something to social media? I have some time right now while I'm waiting for my kids' PTO meeting to start. Can I write a couple paragraphs? So essentially, it's like just having the mindset in my own experience for me is to know that I need to take those moments when I have them, instead of, you know, scrolling through Facebook, actually do something useful with, you know, just the minutes that I have. Otherwise, you know, I don't think I would get anything done.
Wow. That's a lot of discipline.
Right, is that there. A lot?
Yeah, that is. No, I'm glad you said that, because I think a lot of us struggle with finding that time, with prioritizing things, and somehow staying productive while still handling all the other aspects of our life.
Wow. Yeah, the other thing too that I've found works for me, I keep my phone on Do Not Disturb after 10 p.m. and before 8 a.m. So I don't check any social media. I don't look at, you know, anything like that after 10 o'clock and before 8 o'clock, because it literally like just kills my productivity. Even if it's stuff that's like maybe potentially work related, I don't even check email. I don't do anything before 8 and after 10. And it honestly helps me sleep better, because I'm not just like browsing through stuff before bed. And it helps me focus like on my husband more, because the kids are asleep and that's usually like our time. And in the morning, it helps me focus on the kids more, because my husband's gone to work and I'm trying to get the kids off to school. Now I do like podcast stuff and businessy type stuff in that way, but as far as like social media and the things that just waste your time altogether, I try to keep that off my plate for a few hours a day.
And how did you come about setting those boundaries? Like what was it that, you know, made you finally say, you know, I'm getting more pain out of this than I am pleasure, and I need to make a change?
Yeah. I would say I realized that, you know, so my husband and I decided a long time ago, we're not going to have a TV in our bedroom, because, you know, lots of studies show like you're happier, you talk more, all this kind of stuff. But we were still like, we would just get into bed and then we'd pull out our phones and then just like scroll for an hour and then say goodnight. And it was like, wait a second, what's the difference? Like, we may as well have a TV in here. You know, he's looking at his work emails and I'm looking at my work emails and looking at social media stuff. And it was like, this isn't like quality time. And so he doesn't do that. He kind of needs a little bit of wind down, mindless wind down. And for him, you know, social media is that. But for me, it's like, my brain wants to get engaged in all these conversations. So sometimes he still will, but I just decided like I need to set some boundaries for me, because I was seeing a pattern in my productivity just really frankly sucking in the literal sense of the word. Like it was just being sucked away by me doing that. And it's remarkable how much you can get done when you don't feel like you need to check those notifications.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that mental fitness and that self-awareness of knowing, you know, what's most important right now and what's going to be most important in the future,
right,
are hugely beneficial to entrepreneurs, to independent designers, to designers as a whole.
Yeah,
and absolutely. The people. I mean, you know, I think that's one of the things that a lot of us miss, is that we're never trained to prioritize our thoughts.
Yeah, especially in this world.
Yeah,
of, you know, everyone wants our spare minutes. It's like, I mean, it's not going to be too bad if I just get on Facebook just for, you know, 15 minutes and then you realize it's been an hour and you're like, what in the world did I just do for the last hour?
Exactly. So that brings me into something that I saw on your website. You know, I went through a couple of your design tips. Number 102, choosing your motivation. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a very great, that was a very valuable insight, because a lot of us have a hard time being motivated and then being motivated by the right things and selectively knowing what motivates us and gravitating towards that thing. So can you just illustrate really quickly how you came up with that idea for design tip number 102?
I think it was just one of those things where I realized that through my process, which is something we'll talk about later, but over the years, I've just developed a lot of ideas about creativity and stuff. And it occurred to me at some point that creativity is actually work. That, you know, as a creative, as a creative entrepreneur, especially, like, sometimes you sit down, and I realize it's probably when I started writing the blog, I guess, you realize that, like, I don't feel motivated. Like, I don't feel creative. But then it's like, okay, well, I sort of, and I think I talk about this in the video, I'm not sure, I've talked about it a lot. To me, it kind of equated to the idea of, like, when you're married or when you're, like, in a serious relationship, you sometimes don't feel like in love with that person. Like, sometimes you don't feel like being nice to them for whatever reason, but it's like, okay, but the fact is that you do love them. Whether you feel love or not, you should still act in a loving way. And I kind of started thinking about that in relation to creativity and, like, okay, I don't feel creative right now, but frankly, my client and my deadline could care less about how I feel at the moment. Like, I need to choose to be motivated, choose to be creative right now. And the only way that I manage to get over that hump is to follow my process, because the process doesn't care how you feel. It just works. And eventually you get to a point where you get over the hump of not feeling creative. And through the process you go, oh, I know what I'm doing. And your brain's like, okay, it's time to be creative. As opposed to, like, oh, I'm just going to sit back and maybe, you know, sketch or maybe go for a walk until I just, like, feel some magic inspiration. It doesn't usually happen like that. And, you know, you don't have the luxury. If you are a visual communicator being paid for work, even if you're a fine artist, you know, you might have a patron who's expecting something from you. And you can't tell them, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have that thing right now. I wasn't feeling motivated and I wasn't feeling creative today. And it's like, I'm sorry, it doesn't work like that in the real world. So I had to come up with, you know, this idea of, you have a choice, you know, in life for everything. Why not have, like, take the power back and say, like, I'm choosing to be motivated today so that I can choose to create something awesome.
That's so, you said just something right there that really got my brain going, is you choose to do something. You choose how you want to present something. You choose how you want to present yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that really speaks on how people brand themselves and how branding works. It's that choice on how to very deliberately create this feeling, this experience, this mental association. So can you talk a little bit about your perspective on branding?
Yeah. So I think that people often don't realize the difference between, say, a logo and a brand. I have to explain this to more clients than I have to explain most things. And it's because they don't realize, you know, they part of my process is this is a design brief. And I ask them, you know, are there any logos whether they're competitors or not, that you like and why. Just because I like to see their perspective on their, you know, what they are, what's visually pleasing to them. And, you know, 95% of the time it's like Apple. And it's like, okay, but you understand that your draw to Apple is not the Apple logo. That is not why you're like so gung-ho about Apple. You know, now, yes, we put the Apple stickers that they give us for free with our phones on our cars and our laptops and all this stuff. But that is actually the brand. We are owning the persona of Apple, not the logo. And I think that my perspective on branding, I think, is just understanding that a brand is what people think about you and how they feel about you and how you want to be perceived. Not, you know, here's a picture of a building with, you know, a circle on it or something, and this is our brand. No, that's your logo. And it's a representation of your brand. And if you do it successfully, people will feel about that logo the way they feel about your company, and they'll be very loyal to it, et cetera. But yeah, branding is something that I take very seriously when I do it for a client. I make sure to look at the symbology of the shapes that are being used. Make sure that the typefaces are appropriate and give off the right vibe. The colors, especially, like, I'm a huge, huge, huge advocate for color theory and color psychology, and making sure that the colors chosen for any design, but especially for branding, are appropriate in meaning for that company. Because if you choose, you know, yellow and black, which are super powerful colors for like a preschool, that's giving the wrong impression. You know, and a designer should never just be choosing colors because they, speaking of feelings, feel like it works. And it should never be about feelings for us. It should be objective choosing of things, especially for brands, because they are so important.
How valuable would you consider branding?
Oh man. I think that one of the first things, and this isn't just because I want people to like call me and hire me. Like, if you are thinking about like starting a company or a startup or a restaurant or any kind of thing, and you haven't immediately thought of hiring a designer to put together your brand for you, your branding package, your logo, your business cards, all the things, the website, you're doing yourself a huge disservice. A few weeks back, I posted an article from, I believe it was Fast Company, but it was, I don't remember exactly, but it was basically like the businesses and the startups that are design led are the most successful. And it's for a reason. You know, I know a guy, his name is Hugh Weber. He actually just spoke at our AIGA design conference, and he basically believes that designers can save the world because it's our job to solve problems. And I 100% agree with that. If you lead your business with design, and partner with a designer that knows what they're doing, your business will reap those benefits. That is why Apple is such a huge leader. Not only do they have, you know, an iconic logo, but Steve Jobs in the beginning, you know, took design classes and understood the importance of design, and that has carried through, you know, now even after his death. Like, that is a huge part of the company.
I have to agree. I mean, as a fan of Apple products, the way that they're designed, the way that I experience them, the way that other people experience them, you know, whether it's the phone or the AirPods or the EarPods or the laptops, the desktops, you know, everything, you can tell that you're using an Apple product right away.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Johnny Ive is like my hero.
And
like, it's his job to make sure everything is designed well. And man, what a big job.
Absolutely. I would say that he definitely enjoys his job.
Oh man, who wouldn't? I bet he doesn't sleep a lot though.
Probably not.
I don't envy that of him.
No, but I imagine that he has a massive inspiration file.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Are you kidding?
You know, and that brings me to another topic that I saw. I thought this really resonated with me because I collect things as well. And you put up a blog post that says collect and don't trust a designer who doesn't. What does that mean? can you break that down for the people listening?
Yeah. I was just thinking one day, like, I collect a lot of things. I could maybe call myself like a borderline pack rat, but I just looking around my office right now, like I have tons of books. I mean, books are one of my big things across my life, but I also have, I collect old cameras. I collect, markers and, you know, various types of art supplies. I collect old magazines. Goodness, I can't even think of all the things I collect. Albums, like vinyl albums. I collect, souvenirs. I like to collect souvenirs from places that I've been and, you know, display them. I collect old toys that maybe are nostalgic to me. I have Pokey and Gumby up on my bookshelf here in my office. I was just thinking, like, is it weird that I collect things? Like, why do I collect things? And it's like, I believe that people that collect things are much more interesting, especially if they collect lots of different things, because that means that you're learning about lots of different things, and that means that you're gonna understand more people in more ways, you know. I feel like I'm sort of a strange person, and I'm good with that, but it's like I like comics, but I also really love Shakespeare and classic literature. I like, you know, I'm not a girl that really likes chick flicks, but I really love Die Hard, you know, and stuff like that. And I collect, and I have such this weird eclectic taste for different things, and I think that that has been part of the thing that's made my design and my process more interesting, because when it comes to researching and stuff, I don't just use one avenue ever, and I think it's because I'm constantly wanting to learn about new things and figure out new things. And I think that the thing that I was trying to say about, like, don't trust a designer who doesn't collect things is basically, like, if you're hiring a designer that isn't interested in anything, they're probably not very creative. They're probably not going to give you very interesting results when you give them a job to do. It's like, you know, I could have done that with someone on Fiverr or downloaded some free template. You know, if this person doesn't have any, like, soul, in my opinion, like, if you don't collect stuff, mm-hmm. like, are you not passionate about anything? Because if you're not passionate about anything, how can you be passionate about your work? And I guess that's kind of, that was kind of the point that I was trying to get at with that. That was a long answer. Sorry.
No, that was perfect. That was absolutely perfect. And, you know, you were talking a lot about how that collection, it really informs a person's creativity, because internally, mentally, we get to take those things that we love, those little tchotchkes or the books, the ideas behind those things, and cross-associate them with other things that we've learned in our lifetimes or other things that we're interested in. And that's really what gives birth to these great creative concepts, these big ideas, you know, mm-hmm. and it really helps with the whole problem solving part of these creative problems. Mm-hmm. Taking what a client needs and transforming it into this solution, this visual graphic solution, or this graphic solution that encompasses a feeling. Right?
Right.
So let's dive into that. Let's talk about your process.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, I have like a couple of variations of my process. I'll basically talk about, like, the process that I have that I go through with clients. the one that I teach to other designers and students is a little bit more nuanced to things that maybe wouldn't translate over a podcast. But essentially, it's essentially like seven really basic steps. And just for a little background, people always ask me, like, my process is so specific, and it's parts of it are almost like trademarkable, if that's a word. But I really only decided to figure out this process because I had so many clients, when I would give them my pricing on quotes and stuff, they would kind of like balk at it and be like, you know, I don't understand why this costs so much. Like, why does this cost so much? And it just got really old, as it probably does for most designers. And I again, instead of just pouting about it, decided, okay, well, what can I do to help them understand what they're paying me for? Mm-hmm. So I had to do a lot of like creative soul searching of myself and figure out, okay, I know what I do. I know I'm worth this money, but how can I simplify this for them? And so I basically came up with like a one-page sheet with boiling down my process to about like seven steps so that they could understand. And I'll list them off first, and then I'll kind of explain them a little bit. So the first one is the initial meeting, and that's either, you know, an email conversation or a phone call, something like that. And the reason that I don't meet them in person on the first is because of my second step in my process. I like to have them fill out a design brief questionnaire before we ever like have that long conversation. And I do that for two reasons. One is because it's a two-page form, basically. It has lots of questions about their company, their background, their strengths and weaknesses, like all that kind of stuff. It's kind of a mix of design questions and marketing questions. And it kind of weeds out the people that aren't serious, that are just like, oh, I just want to check and see how much this chick would charge for a logo, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it weeds those people out. Then it also gives me an idea about them before I sit down and talk to them. And so when we do sit down and have that chat, I can then converse with them about their needs, as opposed to like, okay, well, let me get back to you. So the design brief questionnaire is the second one. Kind of built into that is then sending them the quote. So if they decide they want to go with me, I then get into a research and brainstorming mode, which is step three. And this is the step where there's lots of like nuancey things, you know, for designers, like mind maps and using a lot of English class-based type stuff. I research lots of different things here too, and that's where, you know, collecting things comes in handy, all my books and all kinds of stuff. I have a couple of podcast episodes on research if you'd like to listen to more on that. But the next one is sketching, and that is a really key part of my process that I wish more people would do. It's actually physically sketching with a pencil and a sketchbook or a paper. I feel like there's something that happens, and this isn't something I feel like, it's actually been proven by scientists, that writing things down and using a physical writing implement actually helps you be more creative and come up with more ideas and better ideas. And so I always want to be the best, and if there's something I can do that, then that's what I want to do, and it really does work. So I sketch. Then I don't usually send the client more than three options on any given project, whether it's a logo or a poster or t-shirts, anything I do, three is my absolute max. Once they choose, I render them out on the computer, present them, and, you know, the finishing touches are applied, and we kind of have the conversations back and forth, the client and I, on what, if anything, needs to be changed and stuff. And that's it. It sounds pretty simple, but there's, like I said, a lot of nuances in those things. But I really wanted to just make it as simple as possible for the person outside of the design realm to understand what they're getting.
Mm-hmm. And let me touch on a couple of those points. How long do you sketch for? Like, do you have a set time? Do you have a set number of sketches that you do mentally? Or is it more about just getting as many ideas on the page as possible?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of a mix of all of those. I generally have, I don't even know what size this, I have it sitting here in front of me. I don't have my ruler. I don't know what size this is. It's like a 5x7, slightly larger than a 5x7 sketchbook. I don't know what this is, like a 6x9 maybe. I usually do about 4 pages on average of very small thumbnail sketches. Like, they're called thumbnail for a reason. They're like, you know, 1 inch by 1 inch or 1 inch by 2 inch, like really small sketches. I either give myself like a page limit, or I just say, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to sketch for, you know, an hour or something. I generally, you know, give myself time limits on most things. And that's another one of like my tricks. You know, you asked about my time management. It's like, I don't believe that spending 2 days sketching is going to yield any better results than if you spent like a solid focused hour or two. Mm-hmm. You know, same with research, like you could be scrolling through research online for days if you let yourself, but you know, potentially and ideally you've probably already got, you know, the inspiration you need within, you know, a 16th of that time. And so setting time limits also does something in your brain. It's kind of like when you have a paper due the next day, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to giving yourself 2 weeks. Some of us are like, oh man, I have 2 weeks, you know, I'm just going to kind of write a little here, write a little there, as opposed to, oh my gosh, it's due in the morning and you get on there and you like knock that thing out and it's awesome. So, you know, we have an amazing capacity for processing and working in short amounts of time if your brain knows that that's all the time that you have to work on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really important aspect of this, is you can't just let it go on forever, right?
Right.
There has to be a very definitive set of parameters for certain aspects of your process. Otherwise, you're right, you will spend days, even weeks doing research and still come back to something that you achieved in the first hour or two.
Right. Because you forget, like you can't even, your brain can't even hold all of that. Like, you know, it would be awesome if we, you know, had the capacity to just soak it all in and then regurgitate every single possible thing we researched, but it's just not the case.
Right. I'm definitely one of those people that does not have a very large mind palace. I do.
It just gets lost.
Exactly.
I'm like, it's often like the 15th floor in the corner closet or something, and I'm never going to find that.
Exactly.
And it'll come up when I don't need it, and I'll be like, oh, there was that thing. Where was that when I needed it?
And why three? Why just three ideas?
Oh man, I would give only one if I could. That's a little too controversial for most people, but honestly, because of a few things, like you give people too many options and they start to want to mix them up to make more. In my experience, I used to give like, I don't know, some arbitrary number, like 7 or something. And it was always the case that not only would they choose the one that I hated the most, but then they would also want to like pull things from some of the other options and like try to make this mystery cake of logo design that I would never have intended. So that's one, you know, just experiences like they don't need to see more. Another thing that I realized over the years, and honestly listening to a guy named Sean West, I don't know if you've heard of Sean West. And he only does one concept presenting to a client. But the idea is that you are being paid by the client for your expertise. They are trusting that what you bring them can and will work. And in my opinion, the perception of me giving them 5 to 10 you know, logo ideas gives the impression that I don't really know what you want, but here's some things. What do you think? Like, and it just, it's not a very confident approach. Whereas if I am saying, here's my, you know, in my case, my top three, these are the things that match your mission, your brand the best, these colors, these shapes, all of them work with the concept that we have chosen. There's three different executions. Any of these could work. It's basically your preference right now. And so the amount of times I've gone major changes on any three or any one are almost zero, because at that point I have, if we're doing our jobs right, if we're doing our due diligence on research, on making sure that everything we do can answer the question why, you know, why this font, why this shape, why these colors, they should have like almost no reason to question or change anything that you've done. So honestly, the only reason I give three instead of one is to give them the illusion of choice, when honestly, almost every time they choose the one that I would have chosen if I only gave them one. Which is kind of fun. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that absolutely does. You know, and I've encountered the mystery cake logo a couple of times in the past, as well as the mystery cake website.
Oh yeah, that's even worse. That's another whole bag of worms there.
It really is.
There's a lot more to mess with on a website design than on the logo.
There really, really is. So you mentioned Sean West as somebody that you are tracking, that you, I guess it, he's kind of like a mentor in a lot of ways in your design world. Who else are you influenced by?
Oh man, that's a hard question. We'll just go with my gut. Okay, so Sean West has been really influential on me and this whole entrepreneurial creative thing. James Victori, he's a really amazing motivator, no nonsense, no BS, like do what you love or don't do anything at all kind of guy. And Sean West is kind of on the other end of like, he's a little more businessy, you know, he's like only give the client one choice and he's, there's only one right way to do things. And so I like that they're on such opposite ends of the spectrum. And I think I follow somewhere in the middle. So I can like, you know, grab a few from Sean West and grab a few things from James Victori and kind of, be bold, but cautious at the same time as a business owner. And then, there's another guy, his name is John Acuff. He's written a few books on entrepreneurial stuff. He's had some 30-day challenges, and he's honestly the reason that I started writing a blog. I had been meaning to do it for probably 5 years, and he did a 30-day, you know, challenge to basically do whatever you want. Like, choose one thing, and for the next 30 days, like, pursue that thing, and if you still want to do it after 30 days, like, now you've already got it going, and that kind of started this whole ball rolling. I would say probably those three guys, and Gary Vaynerchuk has been a huge one too. He's a good kick in the pants, if you don't mind some vulgarity, a lot of vulgarity. But he's such a brilliant businessman, and it's, you know, he doesn't do it just for shock value. That's just who the guy is. And it's like, you know, I don't cuss. I don't say those words in my personal life or any other life, but because I know he has such valuable things to say, it's just kind of like whatever. Mm-hmm. He has so much content to consume. It's just like an avalanche, and I don't even touch getting all of it in my brain, but his stuff's really good. He's great to follow on Instagram, because when I do have those moments where I'm like, I'm just going to sit on Instagram instead of do something I should, I see a post that's like, get off your butt and work. And I'm like, okay, I'm up. You know, so I think those four guys are really instrumental in what I do. And the funny part about it is two of them are designers and the other two are not at all designers. It's just, I love their mindset. I love their motivation. And I like the way that they live their entrepreneurial lives.
I have to agree. You know, for me, I think the people that you follow, the influencers, right?
Yep.
those are the people that have already been there. They've been where you want to be. And the fact that they're turning around and then releasing this information on how to get there themselves, that's definitely something that inspired me to start doing podcasts. And well, the other part of it was that we were producing podcasts for some of our clients already. And, you know, it's not something that I learned in school. It's not something that was ever even raised in school. I don't know if.
Right. Yeah. I don't even think they were a thing.
Yeah. I don't think they were.
And, don't tell anyone we're old.
You know, I think they figured that out already just by the way that we talked. Yeah. And the fact that we started out in design school, just talking about print design and dabbling slightly in web design. And here we are.
It was like Flash.
Yeah, exactly.
Flash was just happening.
Yeah, and there was no social media. There was, I think, Friendster at the time. That was the big thing. And then maybe halfway through school, MySpace, and then
I think like AIM.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's where we started. You know, and now we're coming into this whole internet online information everywhere revolution. And we're talking about guys who, you know, they started even before us. Like Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, he was running Wine Library and doing the first e-commerce over dial-up.
Right. It's so crazy.
Exactly. And, you know, so the value in his content and his authenticity, I think that's really what it comes down to in branding. Is that authenticity?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and people will. People have an innate sense for smelling out a fake. 100%. You know, if I sat here on this podcast or mine or my videos or anything else and tried to be less of a weirdo, it would be really awkward because I say dumb stuff and I say weird things and. If it would be really obvious if I was trying to be, maybe even trying to be Gary Vaynerchuk, like I sound goofy saying like curse words because it's just not something I do and it's really obvious.
Whereas for me, I'm 100% comfortable and at home swearing.
Most people are.
Yeah, you know, it's just how I grew up. My dad was in the Navy, my uncles were in the Navy, some of my other uncles were. In motorcycle gangs, so
wow! Look at you.
Yeah,
you're like black sheep over here.
I have quite the tapestry of a background. But you know, it's all of those things that come together that you know really. I would sound fake if I just tried to keep it 100% conservative all the time, and I feel
right.
You know, because that's just not me, and that's not how. I can present myself, which does, you know, it causes a little bit of conflict in me sometimes because when I'm talking to a mixed room, I try and veer a little bit more towards the conservative side just so I can make sure that my words are getting through. But then I also understand the value of just hitting them with me being me 100% because it captures that attention again.
Right. Well, and in relation to, you know, like my own personal brand, at this point in my career, like I'm at the point where I can basically decline clients if I don't feel like our ideologies or our personalities mesh. And if you aren't presenting yourself as an entrepreneur, as a designer who is, you know, more, you know, client-based, if you're not presenting yourself fully as your own brand to a client or to a company that you could potentially do work for, there will eventually be like a clash because if you are putting forth this other persona that they think they're hiring, and then over time in a working relationship, they realize that that's not really who you are, that's going to be really bad for you as your own brand.
Absolutely. I heard something that a mentor taught to me. Well, I didn't hear it. I listened to him and I absorbed it. Words matter.
Hearing is better.
Words matter.
Yeah.
Words do matter. He told me once, time will either promote you or expose you.
Agreed.
And, you know, I see it over and over again being lived out. And it's 100% true. Absolutely 100% true. So what you just said, I totally agree with. Yeah, especially in business. Especially in business. So I don't want to hold you up any longer. I know that you have a million things on your plate as you...
I do, but it's okay because I love this. I've actually only ever been interviewed once before this. And so it's fun to be on the other end instead of always being the interviewer.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's have you back on. We can talk about some more design related stuff. We could talk a little bit about more branding stuff. I don't want to interfere with too much. Yeah. Excellent. So Brandy of BrandyC.com, you can hear her podcast at BrandyC.com/type/ help me out with the rest of it, Brandy.
Oh man, I don't even know. You can just find it on iTunes.
Design Speaks.
just
on iTunes.
Yeah, Design Speaks. It's on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And select episodes are on SoundCloud. But yeah, you can find us. Just search Design Speaks podcast if you forget all of that, and it'll show up in Google or wherever you search things.
Awesome. What social media platforms are you on, Brandy?
I'm everywhere at Brandy C, just at symbol BRANDIS as in Sam EA. Not me, Brandy C, that's my personal. So unless you want to see lots and lots of pictures of my children, you probably just want to follow Brandy C.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Brandy. And I can't wait to have you back on the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Shenandoah. It's so nice of you to invite me here. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And if you want to hear any more of our podcast, go to sociallinus.com/blog. We'll be posting episodes there, soon to be on iTunes. And we will talk to you another time. Thank you so much, Brandy. Have a great day.
You too.